Our subject this morning deals with the mystery of the human body. And I think it is probably proper, in a sense, to start with the beginning. In this case, we know that the physical body of the human being is sustained, developed, and unfolded by the use of available physical energies. Our body is composed of practically every element that we know exists and others that we do not know. We realize also that, as Plotinus described it, we come into a world in which most of the elements necessary for health and integration are already polluted before they are built into our own organisms. We breathe in pollution with the first breath of life. We find pollution present in the body of the mother, pollution that cannot be entirely avoided. The parent has to live upon the food products, upon the environmental pressures of the world. And these are all involved in the production, maintenance, and growth of each individual. Thus, we come into a physical world that is full of problems. And we come into a physical body that is full of problems. This point seems to have been generally neglected in the consideration of man and his environment. We realize that the deficiencies in chemistry, in all the processes of nutrition, all these deficiencies not only affect the body, but condition the person inhabiting that body. We do not come into a beautiful physical purity because this purity does not exist in the physical world. Thus, many temperamental problems, difficulties, which we find within ourselves are very largely due to the chemical imbalances of the elements with which the body is built. We have, therefore, not only to fight against the pressures of many forces around us that we do not admire, but we are required to adjust to the conditioning influence of these processes within ourselves. We cannot entirely separate our mortal existence from the mortality which surrounds us and actually inhabits us. To meet this situation, the modern thinking has developed a number of concepts of nutrition and has sought ways to overcome the most obvious and active pollutants. But by the time we grow up to the point of self-significance, where before even the years of majority, we have already inhaled the problems of humanity. We have taken them into ourselves. And the nutrition that we depend upon, as even the light of the sun, is not coming to us in its best possible form. Due to this conditioning, we find that various imbalances, deprivations of essential materials, have a direct effect upon our emotions, upon our thoughts, and upon our professions, trades, and attitudes. We know that the basic discomforts of the body result in discomforts of thought and feeling. And we discover pressures within ourselves which we do not know how to explain. We do not know how to trace them for the most part, but they come out upon us and through us as dispositions, as attitudes, as allegiances, as loyalties and disloyalties. In other words, the human being in the body is not comfortable. Recognizing this inevitable fact, each individual is confronted with the problem of recognizing the sources of attitudes which he may believe to arise from the deepest parts of himself. They do not necessarily have this origin. And even if the basic instincts and intuitions do come from within the individual, they must pass through a partly corrupted body in order to come into manifestation. And as a result of this, the body itself is unable to provide an appropriate environment for consciousness or for the higher ideals of human nature. Corruption always lowers thresholds. It always makes things less than they should be. It distorts. And in various departments of our living, this distortion is viewed as disposition, as temperament, as character. And we sort of feel that these distortions are the real self, and they are not. So getting in is not easy. Getting out is not easy. And being here is not easy. The individual makes every effort that he can, for the most part, well-intentioned, to adjust to the environment in which he finds himself. And very often this adjustment itself is nothing more than a compromise. The individual does the best he can considering the conditions in which he exists. And these conditions, unfortunately, are also operating inside of him. In addition to this type of problem, the body is exposed externally to a wide variety of pressures. There are certain forms of pollution which hit us from the outside as well as from the inside. Also, we realize that world psychological pressures, many of which originate in biology, are continuously afflicting the best parts of ourselves. They are continually preventing us from manifesting the reality that we would like to know and understand. The ancients, therefore, gave us the concept that the body is the living temple of the living God. Each human body is a sanctuary for a spiritual entity or reality. This body, this temple, has been in various ways corrupted. Jesus said that they had made the temple of God a place of merchandise. And he drove the merchants from the steps of the temple with a whip of small cords. More intelligently viewed, more carefully considered, this temple, which has become a place of merchandise, is also within ourselves. We have gradually lost the strength, the vitality, or the incentive to maintain properly this living temple. Most folks do not even bother to consider the body a temple. Our attitude towards our own physical structure is almost unbelievable. In the first place, to most individuals, the body is merely a servant of the purposes of the will, the mind, and the emotions. The body is merely a kind of animal which is supposed to draw wagons as horses did, which is supposed to be a faithful servant to the pressures that are forced against it. We have already discovered scientifically that the moods and attitudes of the individual have a very strong effect upon the body, but we have not fully realized the power of the body itself to affect the individual. We still take it for granted that we rule the body, that it will do what we order it to do, But between the difficulties in the physical structure itself and the difficulties in the mental and emotional complex which dominates the body, we have many reasons to understand why illness and suffering appear to be inevitable. There is no clear evidence or proof that nature itself wants man to suffer. Nature wants the individual to grow. Nature has provided an environment suitable for growth, and the human being has gradually, over a long period of time, compromised his principles, and in so doing has, in one way or another, adversely conditioned the world in which he lives. So here we are, as persons, inhabiting two environments, the larger environment of the world and the smaller environment of our own body. We realize also that it's very difficult to balance man's relationship to his own flesh. We have a great many health experts who are very much involved in the conditioning of the body. We know that we produce some of the world's finest athletes, and that all over the world, the training of the body for athletic purposes is an acknowledged procedure. But in the training of the body, we have to get into another difficulty. We are apt to gradually create the concept that the body in itself is the most important of all things. We are inclined to compromise or even deny the growth of the person in the body in a very deep, powerful program of maintaining the physical form itself. Now, the physical body has laws. Everything in the universe is ruled by law. And the laws of the physical body are very simple, actually, although very difficult to enforce. The law is that the body is the instrument by means of which the individual is able to exist in this material world. Without the body, he is a vaporous abstraction. Without the body, he has no means of making the contacts with the material world around him, which are necessary to the expression of his inner life or the development of his character. So we have to be a little watchful of those who give the body too much catering. It is not really good for the body to be spoiled by indulgence any more than it is good for it to be impoverished by various forms of deprivation. The body has its own rules. The body is a useful servant, but not a good taskmaster. It is very important to us, but its very importance depends upon its normalcy. Now we have in the world what we might call the good life. This good life is very largely lived at the expense of health. It is a means of indulgence of appetites. Now, appetites actually do not originate in the body itself. They are conferred upon it. But in the gratification of the emotional and psychical appetites, the individual may destroy the body or make it continually more infirm and incapable of giving its proper cooperation to the inner life which inhabits it. So the care of the body requires a kind of agricultural outlook in which it must be provided with everything necessary, but that if it is overindulged, it in turn gradually develops a kind of tyranny which is given to it by the emotional and mental ambitions of the owner thereof. Going a little further into this situation, we come upon natural protections by which the body seeks to restore itself. The body is a tremendously complicated mechanism, but in the process of its development through millions of years, it has also built strong defense mechanisms. These mechanisms, to function, however, must be given the cooperation of the person inhabiting it. Therefore, we know from sad experience that what we might term the simple life is the best for the body. It is proper for it to receive nutrition. It is proper for it to receive exercise. It is proper for it to practice a proper hygiene. But in all things, we treat the body as a faithful friend. And if we spoil a friendship, we are in trouble. In the course of time, appetites arising in the emotional nature of the individual have come to practically control the attitude of the mind toward the body. On the one hand, there is a complete ignorance. The body simply is there, it's ours, and when we can do with it as we please, and it must either cooperate or we consider the body to be at fault. Actually, it is impossible for a body governed by natural law to work in harmony with a mind or emotion that is violating natural law. So the conflict between the natural needs of the body and the artificial activities of the individual, this conflict is bound to result in bad health. Now, the body being inferior to the being inhabiting it can be and often is seriously endangered by our way of life. The body needs a proper environment. And in our present intense scientific industrialism, the body of the individual is sacrificed to external factors that are themselves not necessarily valid. The body is expected to perform all kinds of labors. It is brought under the control of an economic theory in which people employ the body rather than the person in it. And if the body fails, the abilities of the person are rejected. If we live in a world in which most of human activity is devoted to a single purpose, and that is economic maintenance, the body is going to be one of the primary victims. It is not intended to be so treated. It is not intended to work deep under the earth, hour after hour, year after year. It is not intended to be locked into an industrial situation in which there is no incentive for the development of the person in the body. This person becomes merely a servant of a world economic institution. And as a result of that, in turn, the body suffers and gradually falls into a variety of infirmities. So the prudent life is one in which there is a reasonable distribution of efforts, where the body is cared for by proper recreation, relaxation, and rest and nutrition. And the person in the body is enabled to have a form, a material structure that gives opportunity for the expression of its overself or the divine in man. Materialism is very largely involved in this complex, inasmuch as materialism estimates the value of a complete human being in terms of his economic productivity. He is here not to be a person, but to maintain an ever-expanding system of world industry. This industry takes the person away from the natural habits of life, deprives him in many instances of the proper emotional integration in his home, in his business, everywhere that he functions. He is gradually being locked into a kind of life that is now governed largely by computerization. All this means sickness. It means trouble. It means the fact that the individual has not recognized the true nature of his own construction. This body is his house. It is his duty to keep this house as best he can, to protect it, and to gradually realize that it is not his own house alone. It is the house of his God. It is the house of the divine power which manifests through him. To keep this house is therefore not merely a physical responsibility, it is a spiritual responsibility. Because if it is allowed to fall into disorder, that part of man which is the important part, the governing part, the part which is tied to the universe and tied to the divine plan of things, is forbidden natural expression. The body captured into one of these unfortunate patterns nearly always gives us warnings of approaching evil. It tells us by our own reaction that something is amiss. We discover it when we find our disposition falls apart. We find it when we observe that jealousies and all kinds of competitive attitudes make life very difficult. Another phase of the body is that it is by nature equipped to combat nearly all of the diseases which commonly affect the flesh. The body has its own protective mechanism, but if this mechanism is disarranged or the various processes of the body are corrupted, it is no longer able to meet the need and challenge of external situations. We realize, for example, that the body can protect us from most diseases that come from parasites, bacteria, germs, and things of this nature. It is constantly throwing off from itself what has been called an invisible atmosphere. This is a sort of aura, and it is a defense against the intrusion of physical destructive factors. This defense will very often enable the individual to protect his health, to guard his life, and to avoid the contagions and infections which are all too prevalent. But in order to do this, we must recognize an analogy. Most persons who are not well organized psychologically are more open to sickness than those who are better integrated. The reason being obvious, that the well-integrated person inhabiting the body is a benefactor, helps the body to maintain its own proper functions. When the inner life becomes disturbed, it reacts upon the body, lowering resistance to the dangers of internal corruption and also from environmental contagions and infections. The magnetic field of the body does give us a kind of invisible perspiration. It is an invisible kind of fur which covers the body, and the hair on the body is more or less merely a crystallization around this type of energy, which corresponds in nature around us with the vegetable kingdom. By keeping the magnetic field fairly well adjusted, the individual, therefore, will protect himself against the diseases arising in his own mind and the ailments that come to him from the outside. We have various means of combating various ailments, but we have also developed a very pernicious situation which will have to be faced ultimately by every thoughtful person, and that is the failure of the theory in medicine of protecting health. We are working more to find ways to remedy our own mistakes, but we are not being much instructed on how to prevent these mistakes. We may get a nutritionist who will help us to balance the body, but this same balance of the body may not touch into the inner causes of deterioration. Because an unhealthy mind, even in a healthy body, will ultimately destroy health. We are also trying to remove the symptoms of our own indiscretions. We are developing an elaborate pharmacology which is dedicated largely to obscuring mistakes. We are trying to neglect or kill out the body's natural means of bringing problems to the attention of the mind. We are, therefore, of the opinion in general that if we can abolish the symptom, that we have cured the ailment. This is not true and never can be. And many of the medications that we use are actually destructive of the body and its own natural resources. So we have covered a mistake, a basic mistake, by finding artificial remedies to obscure the truth. And we feel that if we have obscured the truth, all is well. We are now in the midst of a more or less obvious medical revolution in which the study of these dangerous drugs is coming into the foreground. We are trying to use drugs as a substitute for right conduct, and there's just no way in which this can be accomplished. If we allow the respiring and developing resources of the body to work as they should, we will not find it necessary, except in a great emergency, to come to its assistance, if we are able to do things well. One of the basic theories of osteopathy was that nearly all physical ailments are due to obstruction. Some process of the body has been prevented from expressing itself in a normal way. As a result of that, the body forces or rushes to the aid of the situation many resources of its own. But these resources, if they are abused, and if the condition does not come to the conscious attention of the owner of the body, will very often result in a congestion in which function is disarranged. Until this congestion is broken up, the normal processes of the body cannot be restored. Now, as we go a little further into the subject, we realize that the Kabbalists of old and other mystic groups have recognized that the body is the microcosm of the universe. The body is a miniature of all things. And strange it may seem, the bodies of very primitive creatures, from trilobites on up and down, these bodies are all actually miniatures of a universal pattern. They are all the small archetypal architectural forms by which the complete geometry of space is epitomized into one small area. And always these natural forms take universal mathematical, geometrical structure. We know this in science. We know that mathematics and geometry are the great keys to universal order. And they are nowhere more evident than in the physical body. Among those who worked very hard in the early days to understand this were, remarkably enough, not scientists, but artists. Artists were the first to really contemplate the body. To them, the human form was one of the most beautiful structures that nature has produced. And in studying this structure, the artist, in an effort to transfer it to canvas or to paper or to carve it in stone or marble, had to become keenly aware of the substructure of the body. He realized that he could not simply copy the surface. When he did, the work was superficial and inadequate. So we are indebted to people like Albrecht Dürer, Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, for the careful study of body structure. Out of this study came patterns like the dynamic symmetry. We found gradually the whole system of Pythagorean mathematics caught and captured and held in the bodily structure. We began to recognize that the measurements of the body were highly significant. And among the early medieval Kabbalists, there was a system of analysis of character by carefully measuring the relationships between structure in the body. It was also observed that stress and all these factors, strain, all were involved in body protective mechanisms. We learned architectural principles of stress from the structure of the body and the muscles. Everything that we really have on the outside of us is simply a broadening and generalizing of the structure within us. And most of all, there was a wisdom in it. And that wisdom was that the natural procedures of nature in bringing formal structures into manifestation, these procedures were one of man's most available sources of instruction, by means of which he might learn of all things by becoming aware of a few things in their action upon each other. In the same sense, therefore, the body gradually becomes analogous to the great cathedral. The great cathedral was a masterpiece of human engineering, but the human body is a masterpiece of divine engineering. And no rule that is going to stand in nature around us or in man's achievements can go contrary to the rules governing the creation of the physical form. The physical form was not really physical in origin. It was physical by extension. It is a body built by energy around an invisible core. And these energies flowing out of their own vitality enable this body to become a manifestation of themselves. The whole divine plan is revealed through man. In another analogy, we can go to some of the old Rosicrucian concepts of the 17th century, by means of which it was clearly indicated that the body was the small book. There were three great books upon which man could depend for honest information. In the Rosicrucian mysteries, the first of these was the Holy Scripture, the book of the prophets, the book of the messianic dispensation, the book of the way of life within morality, integrity, and beauty. The second great manifestation, the great book, was the universe, in which man, by gradually exploring the infinite resources of space around him, and gradually becoming aware of the laws moving inevitably and immutably through this space, the individual, by the study of the universe, the created composite body of all things, could come to better understand the Creator, and finally, by downgrading a little bit, in a sense, its perspective, it could come finally to the realization that man himself was the third book. The man himself was the miniature in which things vast and impenetrable might become more obvious, more simple, and more direct to our attention. It is not so easy to fathom the mysteries of deity or the Holy Scriptures. It is not within everyone's capacity to understand the universe and all of its mysterious workings. But when these things are brought together in a little model, a miniature of the whole, they are available to us every day in every walk of life. They are closer to us than any physical relationship that can exist, because they are part of ourselves. And by exploring the little universe ourselves, we not only become more aware of the greater universe, but we also become aware that this greater universe is also within us, that all of the great principles of truth, all of the great wisdom of the ages, all of the great spiritual revelations are brought downward in a mysterious way and locked within the body of the human being. It is difficult to understand some of these mysteries, but they have been worked on rather conscientiously and reverently for very long periods of time. Now, as we enter a little closer to the body and begin to study its structure, we know that the body exists for one purpose only, and that is to reveal that which is within it. That the body exists to provide an appropriate instrument for the measurements and for the manifestations of the human soul. Thus, the body has to have a formal structure suitable to meet the same needs that the universe had when it came forth out of the pre-existent condition of things. The body, therefore, has to be more than a mass of matter. It has to be more than a mere machine. It has to become a means for the expression of that which is within it. And in order to do this, the same processes were necessary as those which brought forth the larger universe. The universe consists of energies moving through organization. And we know that the great cosmological systems of antiquity were really symbolical of the anatomy and physiology of man. Many ancient religions, including those of India and China, based much of their philosophy upon the human body. They did not call it that directly, but they compared various parts of the human body with universal procedures and found that the analogies were accurate and inevitable and true. Under these conditions, what do we find? Primarily, that the body is divisible into systems or parts. These systems or parts are all of them created to make possible the compound function of man. The first thing we realize is that the human being as a body is a commonwealth. We also realize that this body is the most magnificent example of cooperation that exists to our knowledge and understanding. There is cooperation in the parts of the body that we have never been able to find in human society. This cooperation means that all parts are working together for the common good. This is something that we know is necessary, but we've never been able to take this great truth and expand it into our collective existence. We realize that in the body, nothing is indispensable. We realize that within the body, all sections, parts, elements, degrees of bodily existence are in a magnificent, homogeneous pattern, that they are working together forever, and that a discord is artificial to them and is not natural to them. The body, then, represents, in a sense, humanity. It gives us an understanding of the relationship of parts to the whole. Within the body of man, there are more separate living entities than there are creatures upon the surface of the earth. Not only does this involve human beings, but every form of life that exists. Within the human body, there is a far greater assembly of life than to be found anywhere else. Because these units are so small that we cannot see them, because they sometimes are born and die within a few hours, because they are so completely involved in the structures which they nourish and sustain, we simply lose sight of the fact that we are not one being alone, but that the human body is a field of evolution for millions and billions of living things. Everyone, therefore, has his own kingdom. He has an empire over which he rules. And he can be a good ruler or he can be a tyrant. He can serve this body's needs properly or he can use it to exploit its resources for the advancement of his ambitions or his own self-centeredness. If he does this, he is a bad governor. And as a bad governor, he will ultimately be deposed. And we see around us today in society where one tyrant after another loses power, where revolution after revolution upsets the earth, and where one tyranny is largely supplemented by another. But this is bad government, and it is contrary to the magnificent cooperation which makes up the human being himself. It tells us beyond doubt that we must live together in peace, or the common body will perish, and that any disturbance which is neglected any misunderstanding or misinterpretation which is allowed to continue will produce within the body the same anarchy that it produces politically in society. So we are our brother's keeper in a sense. We are certainly the keeper of the life that has been given to us. If we are gods in the making, it is time for us to make good our kingdom right here where it is. And that begins by the proper understanding of what constitutes normal, proper relationship between governing and governed. Now, the governing in man is not perfect either. We are all growing and unfolding creatures. We are releasing little by little the divine potential which is within us. We may not always be able to be the wisest of governors, but we do have the responsibility to make a good try. We are responsible to be as nearly good rulers as possible. So we may say to ourselves, where do we find the guides? Where do we find the information necessary to help us to be good rulers? The Greeks believed that we could find it largely by consideration of living bodies and through autopsy, in which the inner structure is made known, which for a long time human beings failed to understand at all. It was not until the rise of Vesalius that the study of the human anatomy was more or less organized. And in this study, we discover that underneath the skin, there is one of the most complex and magnificent structures that can possibly be imagined, and that all this structure is in a sense part of what is necessary to maintain the composite body. Without realizing this, we lose most of the significance of our own lives, and no one who has a fair study of anatomy and physiology and histology can deny that if from these forms of learning we can find what keeps the body in order. But what we haven't done is to moralize on this. We have not recognized it as a symbol of the larger world in which we live. Now today we are in a great crisis in the world. A crisis in which we discover that the lack of cooperation, the lack of dedication, the lack of the realization that humanity is a body, and that this body is ensouled, and that the corruptions by which human beings relate to each other, these corruptions cause world sickness, just as they cause confusion within the body itself. As we go a little further into this problem, we also begin to estimate the various structures which are necessary to maintain a body. And we know that the three principal centers of the human definitely a trinity, a triune administrative structure.